Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
The Athletic.
Hello and welcome to The View from the Lane, the world-famous Tottenham Hotspur podcast from The Athletic. Now it's time to hand over to your host for this special edition of the show. It's the Danny Kelly, and he's alongside The Athletic's Tim Spears.
Well, what about that, everybody? The most familiar voice for any of you who go to the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium. Yes, I'm Danny Kelly. This really is The View from the Lane, The Athletic's Tottenham Hotspur podcast. And we've got a brilliant lineup for you today. Myself, obviously brilliant. Tim Spears, who's been covering Spurs for the last few months for us here on The Athletic. And that person there, Pete Abbott, whose name you may not even be familiar with, but if you've been to the stadium any time in the last quarter of a century, you'll know those booming stentorian tones. Pete is the stadium announcer. And Pete, thank you very much indeed for joining us today.
Pleasure, absolute pleasure to be here.
Welcome aboard, Tim, as well.
Hi, Danny.
We'll be talking to Pete all about how he got this gig, what it's like to be the Spurs stadium announcer, and much else besides. First, though, we need to get on with the business of the transfer window. And I'm perfectly aware that as we're recording this, look, let's let daylight in on magic. We're recording this on Thursday morning. By the time we get this podcast out, with all the trimmings, as they say, about Christmas dinner, it could be out of date because Pedro Porro may or may not have signed for Spurs. But there is a new signing, Claxon, deal done, and all the rest of it. Spurs have signed Villarreal's Arno Danjuma on loan for the remainder of the season. They swooped, in the language of the tabloids, to hijack Everton's deal for the winger, and he will join on a short-term loan. There is an option to buy clause as well. So for those of you who don't watch every La Liga match and don't remember his spell with Bournemouth, although actually it covered nearly two seasons, who is he? We've enlisted the expertise of one of our talented Spanish writers, Guillermo Rai, to give us the lowdown.
Gerard Moreno has made the run down the right. Lo Celso finds it. Lo Celso goes to the byline here. He's pulled it back nicely and it's turned in. What a start this is for Villarreal. It's Danjuma, with just over 7 minutes gone. Almost a tap-in for the former Bournemouth man. What a season he's having, and what a start Villarreal have made here.
Hola a todos, hi everyone. If I have to speak about Arnau Danjuma, first I have to remember an anecdote that involves him when Real Madrid played at La Cerámica 3 weeks ago. So I was there at the mix zone after Real Madrid lost 2-1, and the first football player who left the stadium was Danjuma, and because of that I had the opportunity to chat with him. There weren't a lot of journalists, I took the opportunity, and later I spoke to his agent and sent him a photo with Danjuma and asked him how was him and if he had any injury, because he only played for 10 minutes at that game. And I also heard from a journalist specialized in Valencia and Villarreal news that Danjuma had an injury in his ankle. But the answer from Danjuma's agent really struck me, because it was something like, if this colleague of yours really knows about Villarreal, then he should know that he's close to leave on loan this winter. And at that moment, nobody knew about Danjuma's intention, but he had a very clear idea that he wanted to return to England. And later on, I knew that he didn't have a good relationship with the rest of his teammates, who described him as a difficult character, but the truth is that one season before, he was the leader of the team in a historic moment for Villarreal. They played the Champions League semi-final against Liverpool, and Danjuma somehow managed to score 16 goals between La Liga and Champions League games, being a left winger, but he has the soul of a striker or something like that. He always has the goal in his head. And before that semi-final, I remember talking to Alexander Arnold, and he told me that Danjuma was his his favorite player from Villarreal. So he was more or less like Cristiano Ronaldo or the Cristiano Ronaldos of Villarreal. I don't know if it's good enough, the comparison, but it's something like that. And however, the next season, this season, Unai Emery left, Quique Setién was named as a new coach, and the Juma lost his place in the 11. He had several injuries, and even then, he still scored 6 goals. So all I can say is that he's a striker for certain. He can be useful for Antonio Conte, most of all, for second halves, and he can give some rest to Son, Perisic, Kulusevski and Kane. But I really think that it will be difficult for him to have a better role than he had at Villarreal, that's for sure.
Yeah, that was the Athletic's Guillermo Rai, who, as you heard, described Danjuma as a winger with the soul of a striker. Tim, what do you know about this transfer? Because, and this is why I don't keep across the in the nose on the internet, all the rest of it. As with Bentancur and Kulusevski last January, it turns out the Spurs can, for the first time in the history, keep a secret and sign players without it being all over the newspapers for weeks in advance, although not doing it with Porro. How did this hijack of Everton's transfer come about?
Yeah, he was very, very close to signing for Everton. He'd completed a medical up there, and his representatives were due to meet him in Liverpool. They were had arranged to meet him at the train station for him to travel up from London to complete the deal, sign the paperwork, do the media, et cetera, et cetera. But he never boarded that train, Danny.
Oh, it's like a mystery, isn't it?
Spurs had swooped in by that point. I think it was Tuesday morning that they made their inquiries. They had been monitoring the situation quite closely. Obviously, it's no secret that they've been looking to bring in a forward to boost their forward options. And they got the deal done sort of remarkably quickly, really, within sort of 24 hours. It had all been done and dusted. The player had misgivings over, understandably, you know, what's happening at Everton. From what we're told, he was keen to work with Frank Lampard and wanted assurances that Lampard was going to hang around at least for a little bit. And obviously, that didn't happen. He was sacked on Monday, wasn't it? So Spurs swooped in. Fabio Paratici very much still involved, you know, despite recent sort of developments. And yeah, he's a Spurs player, at least to the end of the season on loan. There's an option to buy him in the summer for around £20-25 million. So it's an interesting move. He's had an interesting career. He's had to sort of go down to come back up again. People might remember him at Bournemouth. They might remember him not making an impact in the Premier League because he didn't score in that first season. But in the Championship, I mean, he was far too good for that league. He fired Bournemouth into the playoffs that season with a remarkable run in the final 14 games of the season. Of 11 goals and 5 assists in 14 games, including the 2 goals that Bournemouth scored in the playoffs that summer against Brentford, but they were beaten by Brentford 3-2 on aggregate, which meant that he was keen for a move back to a higher level and moved on to Villarreal, where he continued that form last season. People may remember him being pretty prolific in the Champions League and scored against Juve in the last 16, scored against Bayern in the quarterfinals, their run all the way to the semis where they were edged out by Liverpool.
Scored the important goals in the group stage against Atalanta.
Absolutely, yeah. And in fact, he was missing from the second leg against Liverpool, and obviously Liverpool sort of edged through by a single goal in that game. And if he'd have played, it might have been different, you know, such how important he was to the team. But yeah, it's gone a bit wrong for him this season since Unai Emery left. He had a really good relationship with him by all accounts. But since he left, he's had a bit of a falling out with Setién, and injuries, which have been a bit of a theme of his career, have been a bit of an issue this season. He started the season on the sidelines. So yeah, not exactly a classic Conte signing, Danny, to be honest, in terms of reports of falling out with teammates at times, and certainly a recurring theme of confidence or overconfidence bordering on arrogance, and certainly not the best at tracking back as well, by all accounts, at Bournemouth. And like I said, not a great injury record either. On the flip side, the good stuff is that, you know, he's definitely a match winner on his day against any opposition, can be very prolific, certainly explosive, certainly quick, likes to take players on, likes to excite the crowd, definitely offers something I think that Spurs have been lacking. And will be a very good bench option, you'd imagine, for the majority of his time in the next few weeks and months. So, and offers Spurs a fifth senior forward option.
Pete, at the risk of getting you into trouble with Spurs, and I really want to avoid that in the course of this podcast,
Me too.
Do you still, do you still get terribly excited when a new player comes through the door, or are you in the Danny Rose school of getting out Google?
No, I'm genuinely excited. You know, I think most people are excited by the transfer window anyway, because there is so much going on in terms of players moving about. I think this is potentially a win-win for Spurs. You know, we don't really know what he's going to be like. He had a very good season last season, but as you say, it's not worked out for him for various reasons this year. I'm sure he wants a move given his current situation in Spain. So this is an opportunity for him. If it works out well and he does well for the rest of the season, then there's the option to buy. If it doesn't, then Spurs have lost nothing. But I think if you look back at a year ago and you look at Bentancur and Kulusevski coming in, that just transformed Tottenham's season. They were absolutely instrumental in Spurs' run at the end of last season. Without them, I doubt they would have been top four. So if this guy can come in and have the same sort of effects, all well and good.
Yeah. I mean, look, there's positives and negatives about him. You've already mentioned his brilliant form in the Champions League, up to a few months ago, Tim, and the fact that he didn't score. If you want to do a negative, but he scored brilliantly and often for Bournemouth in the Championship, but didn't manage one in the Premier League. I've got a positive and a negative for you as well. We'll start with the positive, as always on the View from the Lane. And that is that I think I'm right in saying that in the last 18 months, this season and a half, only one other player in La Liga has contributed 10 goals or assists with both left and right foot. And that's Vinicius Junior. So you're really talking about a star player in that case. The negative is, of course, that Danjuma didn't do enough last season, even when he was being absolutely brilliant, to force his way into the Dutch squad for the recent World Cup. His place was taken by somebody called Steven Bergwijn. It swings and roundabouts. I wonder as well, Tim, with your brainy hat on, whether this option to buy is at exactly the level that Spurs would hope to get for money for Giovanni Lo Celso, who's in a reverse situation at Villarreal.
Yeah, I'm sure that's linked, Danny. It's a really good point. And it is a low risk addition, and Spurs have struggled to fight on one front, sort of either side at Christmas at times. You know, with the squad depth, we looked at their bench sometimes, and compared to the teams that they're competing with, it's been really poor. I know they've had some injury issues, but to have five options up front, you know, some people kind of say, where does he fit in? You know, you've got his sort of preferred position, he's cutting in from the inside left position, and you've got Son there, and you've got Richarlison as an option. Well, you know, Son hasn't been scoring for a prolonged period of time now, so and Richarlison still hasn't scored in the Premier League yet. So I think it's a really smart move. Like I said, there are some negatives to it, but if he was the perfect signing, then he wouldn't be coming in on loan, would he? So hopefully Conte can get the best out of him.
Is there any update on the Pedro Porro deal while we're at the transfer window, Tim?
No, obviously things can wildly change, as you know. Just ask Everton about that. But it certainly seems that there's an increasing confidence that this deal can get done. And I mean, it's become a saga now, I think we can say. It's gone on that long. They're edging closer to a deal. Sporting have been holding out for the release clause, but whether Spurs have to pay that remains to be seen. But there's a confidence, I think, on all sides that this is very close to getting done now, perhaps by the time that you're listening to this, dear listener. And if they can get Porro over the line, him and Danjuma are two really good additions in the space of a couple of days.
You're listening to the world-famous View from the Lane podcast.
Okay, that takes us then to our special guest today, Pete Abbott. You don't know him, but you do know him because he is the voice who, unless you're... I can't remember who he replaced. I must have heard another stadium announcer, but I don't remember another stadium announcer. I just remember Pete's voice welcoming... is it the players, officials, and supporters? What's the correct line here, Pete, when you're welcoming the Oppo?
And we now welcome the players, officials, and supporters of whoever it is.
And did you invent that line, Pete, or was it already being said when you took the gig?
Well, to give you a little bit of history about who was there before me, great. Willie Morgan, as far as I know, was the first.
Of course, he
guy.
Was Willie, the great Willie
and
Morgan.
And he was around for a long, long time. Yes. And as far as I know, he came up with that line. He certainly came up with the world famous home of the Spurs. So I'm just following in his footsteps, really. But also Gary Stevens, our former player, did it for a couple of years.
Did he?
He did. Nobody seems to remember his contribution.
Poor Gary.
But he did.
Pete, let me ask you about your background then. I mean, I've known you for years and years and years. But, of course, because we're working in radio studios together, in the breaks we don't talk about football because we talk about football all the time. Pete's reading the news and the transfers and all the rest. It often comes in with breaking news. And we tend to talk about music because Pete is as mad about music as I am. And we'll get on to that a little later because, Tim, as you can see, Pete is not a fella in his teens. Although he could pass for a younger man if he got rid of that stupid beard, he is in fact a person.
He's like my wife.
He is in fact a person of a certain vintage, Tim, who still goes to camp at Glastonbury. That's what you need to know about the abbot here. But Pete, talk to me about how you came to be. Where are you from? How come you're a Spurs fan?
Well, I'm from North London. I was born in Hampstead and I grew up in Finchley. So I've got the right credentials there. I'm a Spurs fan because of the Brazil side in the 1970 World Cup, which was I was 8 years old. It was a tournament that absolutely fascinated me actually for months before it even started. And to watch that Brazil side, the greatest side I think I've ever seen.
Oh, Pete, I'm just working like a glove puppet because, of course, I'm a couple of years older than you, but I've got exactly the same experience. My love of football was cemented by that tournament with that team.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then I looked around English football to find a team that played like Brazil. And this being 1970, there weren't too many of those around. And I just chanced upon... I used to watch football on TV all the time and I just liked Spurs. There was something about Spurs that I liked. There was something about the ground that I liked, even though I'd never been there at that point. And I just latched onto Spurs. And of course, as soon as I went to my first game, 30th of January 1971, against Everton, I was just hooked and that was it.
Just before we get onto your match day routines and things like that, Pete, it's difficult, isn't it? Because we've seen Spurs teams win things and all the rest of it. And yet somehow, in my mind, the team that didn't win anything under Pochettino is one of my absolute favourites. What have been your highlights, do you think, of watching Spurs over the years? Pick a couple or three for us.
Well, I certainly agree with that Pochettino team. I mean, even though it didn't win anything, it was a joy to go and watch them every week because you knew you were going to get entertained. You knew you were going to see something that was worth seeing. I think the best team I've ever seen is the early 80s side. I think any team that has a central midfield of Glenn Hoddle and Ozzie Ardiles is going to be something special. And it played wonderful football and provided a lot of memories. I mean, 1981 for me was one of the greatest evenings. The replay was one of the greatest evenings of my life. The UEFA Cup final in 84 would be the same. And you don't, you know, they are memories that do stick with you for your entire life. The other memory, actually, I've got to say, that has always stuck with me was a game which I actually consider to be possibly the most important game in the history of Tottenham Hotspur. And that was a game against Hull City in the season that we were in the second division. It was the last home game, the most extraordinary game I've ever been to in my life. And I've never seen such an outpouring of emotion at the final whistle of any game. Extraordinary.
Tim, just to give you the background, Spurs had to, having led the second division for the whole season, suddenly putting themselves in a very difficult position to get promoted. They had to beat Hull in the penultimate game of the season, the last game at home, to have any chance of going up. And Pete will correct me if I'm wrong here. The winning goal came late in the game from a very unusual source. Steve Perriman played 1,000 games outfield for Spurs and scored about 3 goals, and that was one of them. Is that right, Pete? Have I got that right? It was Steve Perriman.
It was Steve Perriman, yeah. And it was a very controversial goal because there was a blatant foul on the goalkeeper. And, of course, as soon as the goal went in, there must have been 2,000 people just rushed onto the pitch to celebrate.
Pete, can I just ask, you mentioned how the Brazil 1970 team sort of inspired you then to follow Spurs. Was there a player either in that era for Spurs or maybe later on who sort of epitomised the way that Brazil play and the way you like to your football teams to play football?
I wouldn't say he was very Brazilian, but Alan Gilzin was just a wonderful footballer. And particularly brilliant with, I think he's possibly the best header of a ball I've ever seen, because he was able to pass a ball with his head like most players pass it with their feet. It was an extraordinary thing to watch because I've never seen anyone before or since do that. Certainly not in the way that he did it. So I think he would epitomise that sort of style. He was a very stylish player, Gilzean, and his partnership with Chivers up front was the stuff of legend. But if I had him and Phil Beale, I like Phil Beale, very elegant central defender. But those two would have been, the two players that I really took sort of inspiration from in that early team.
After that game against Hull, Spurs then went for the last game of the season to the Old Dell at Southampton. A beautiful sunny day, as I recall, with both sides, Southampton and Spurs, needing just a draw to guarantee their promotion. In the first minute, Alan Ball, the ex-Arsenal dastard, hit the post for Southampton, which of course said, what the... And, you know, for the rest of the game, I don't think Southampton players passed to him as the lovely 0-0 draw was played out in the sunshine. Forgive my memory won't go as far. I'm not going to look it up like Jack Pitbrook. I think Bolton were promoted as champions. Spurs and Southampton went up behind them. And I think Sheffield United, it's all Sheffield United, isn't it? Sheffield United were the team who were badly done by. Pete, talk to me about how did you get the gig?
Well, I'd actually worked for Spurs before that. I worked for a company called Club Call, who... used to do the old, before the days of the internet, and there was such a time, kids, the only way of getting information on your club was a telephone line. And I edited that for several years before becoming stadium announcer.
Tim, you're too young to have any recollection of Club Call, are you?
No, I remember Club Call in the early 90s. That's the only way you could get your Wolves news.
The long, waffly introductions to keep you on the phone for minute after minute.
Exactly,
after
yeah.
Minute.
That's how it worked. That was how I was sort of first introduced to Spurs. And then Mike Rollo, the lovely commercial manager at the time, who was also responsible for what went out on the big screens at the ground at the White Hart Lane, he got me to do the team news. I had to do the team news in the tunnel. So it was Gary Stevens was the sort of up there in the box doing all the main stuff. And I was just there to do the team news. And then when Gary left, Mike said, well, do you want to take the main job? And and I said, yes. And I've been there ever since.
How does your schedule work at the new stadium, for instance? Do you have to do warming up? Do you turn up at 2 o'clock in the morning, or how does it work?
I turn up probably between 3 and 4 hours before kickoff. When I first started, there were two people, basically two other people other than me involved in it. Now it's a massive production because it not only goes on the big screens, but it goes on the perimeter boards, all the ribbons around the stadium. It's all connected and all in sync. So there's a lot more to it now. I mean, when I first started doing it, the TV side of it, or what went on the big screens, was controlled by two people in what effectively was, and I'm not joking here, a broom cupboard. You couldn't get more than two people in there. Now there's a huge editing suite with banks of monitors in front of you, and you know, they have the capability of doing whatever they want, pretty much. So it's a much bigger project and organization now than it ever was. So it does mean that you have to sort of prep for it a bit more than you used to.
How integrated are you into the club? For instance, how often, if ever, do you meet Daniel Levy? Does he know who you are?
I've met him a couple of times. I doubt he'll remember who I am. It was a few years ago. I mean, to be honest, not much now. When I did the old Spurs line, I was down at the training ground all the time interviewing players and managers. And so, you get to know a lot of people. But now I just do what I do on a match day. I'm integrated in terms of what I do and the team that I do it with.
Pete, can I ask, this might be a weird question, but do you have a particular routine of what you eat and drink before you start? Because, you don't want to eat a sausage roll 2 minutes before you're going on and you've got all the flaky pastry in your throat. You know, you need to sound nice and smooth, right?
You do, yeah. I wouldn't ever eat anything, whatever it was, immediately before I was making any sort of announcement or going on air in a radio studio or something like that. So, I suppose you don't really think about it, but it's just something that I wouldn't ever do. I mean, it's important to. I mean, some names are hard enough to pronounce as it is without a mouthful of flaky pastry to add to it.
Are there examples of that you can give us in terms of how you strike a different tone sometimes? You know, I'd imagine if if there's a particularly somber build-up to a match, maybe Remembrance Day or, I guess, recently when the Queen died, I guess you've got to strike that right tone, right? Or if it's a big Champions League game, you might be a bit more excitable. Is that those different considerations for you as well?
There is, yeah. I mean, obviously, I mean, a home goal is announced in a completely different way to an away goal. So there's an immediate difference there. But it's interesting, announcing to an empty stadium. One of the games was the home game against Arsenal. We won 2-1. Toby Alderweireld scored a winner sort of fairly late on. If there were 62,000 people in the ground, I mean, I would be giving that absolute full beans. But you can't do it. There's no point in doing that when there's no one there. So, yeah, you do have to temper it for, you know, the situation that you're in.
Why do you bother telling us the away scorers?
Well, someone wants to know. The away fans do.
I know, but I always find that a bit galling that we're even telling them who scored the goal. One of the things that's been happening on the podcast in the past few months has been a recognition that the music that gets played, there've been two music threads on the podcast. One, we've been trying to track down the original version, or the version that gets played of what is quite an old song of McNamara's band at halftime. And you've been helping with that. And indeed, you've now found the recording that gets played at Spurs because it doesn't seem to be available on record. It must be specially recorded. But also, particularly Jack Pitbrook, who keeps across the new beat combos, says that there's been a change in the music policy at the stadium and that they're playing a lot more indie music from the early part of this century, you know. I don't know, the Kooks and all kinds of particularly British bands from that era. Now, I did think Pete Abbott could be doing this because I know you love music, but you don't do the music, do you?
Not anymore. I used to. Oh. I did it at White Hart Lane for 20 years, and I would always try and sneak something in that probably shouldn't be there.
What do you think is the most unlikely thing you snuck onto into the playlist at Spurs?
I got a Captain Beefheart track in there once.
Can you remember which one it was?
I do. It was called "Too Much Time." Oh, yeah. It was off the Clear Spot album, and it's actually nice. It's a nice song. It's almost like a sort of Motown song.
So you don't play the tunes now?
I don't anymore. No, they've got a their own DJ who is responsible for it.
Who is he? Because I've got to track this fella down. Do you know what he's called?
I know his name's Kieran.
Oh, there we go.
That's about as much as I can tell you. I shall find out for you,
Danny.
Oh,
that'd be really helpful because I'm going to track Kieran down, but we might get him on here to explain how this is a suitable track for the Spurs Stadium. But we should mention your love of music, Pete, because it's something you and I have bonded over the years. And we often have very similar tastes in things. Why not? It's the classic rock canon. Where we diverge is, now look, You're not a teenager. So I used to always laugh, Tim, when we'd be coming up towards Glastonbury and Pete would be with me in the studio and I go, "So, got your tickets?" "Yes, Danny, I've got my tickets for Glastonbury." "Looking forward to seeing The Cure, are you?" "Yes, very much looking forward to seeing The Cure." "Are you going to camp, Pete?" Because, of course, when I was doing Glastonbury as a music journalist, we were staying in a lovely hotel called The Swan in Wells. Pete, are you still camping at Glastonbury, man?
I am, if I can get a ticket. That's become the problem. It's hard, it's so hard now to get a ticket. I haven't got one for this year yet. I didn't get one last year at all. So it's something that really has become very, very difficult. But I'm hoping to go this year, and this I will be camping. It's the only way to do it, Dan.
And who do you go with? Don't tell me Mrs. Abbott gets dragged along to this fiasco.
Oh, she's been many, many, many times. She moaned about it like mad for the first time. And then the sun came out towards the end and she had a whale of a time and she's been back probably a dozen times since.
Just to sit a human side, what's the biggest bollock you've ever dropped while doing the announcing at Spurs? You must have one emblazoned in your mind.
Yeah, there's a few to be fair, but the worst one, I think it might have been the first season I was actually doing it. Stephen Carr, you might remember, scored, I think it might have been his first Spurs goal, actually, an absolute belter against Man United in the pouring rain.
It.
Well, now I've got a whole bank of monitors in front of me and replays and all sorts. Back then, I didn't have any of that. The moment he scored the goal, I was looking down at my script to see what I was doing next.
Because he scored from miles out. You would know.
Yeah, it was about 35 yards, yeah. And I heard the roar of the crowd, so obviously there's a goal, and I didn't see who it was. And it looked to me as though everyone was congratulating Ralph Fox. So that was the announcement I made. First goal for Spurs, number 7, Ralph Fox.
Which would itself be a novelty, let's be fair, if Ralph scored.
Indeed, yeah. And then I got a few angry phone calls and to make a correction. The other bad one, actually, while we're at it, was Llorente. It was actually before he was at Spurs. He was still at Swansea. But I spent the entire afternoon calling him Fernando Morientes.
Oh, dear. Yeah.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard it right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask me. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Yeah, welcome back, everybody, to the second half of The View from the Lane. I'm Danny Kelly. Tim Spears is with us as well as the stadium announcer at Tottenham Hotspur, Pete Abbott. And Tim, you've got some updates on that 1978 season when Spurs got promoted out of the second level.
Breaking news from 1978. Here we go. I just looked at the table during the break. And Spurs finished third, 1 point behind Southampton and 2 points behind champions Bolton, and edged out Brighton on goal difference. But interestingly, they scored 83 goals, Spurs, which is more than any team in the top three divisions. And they only lost 6 matches. And only champions Nottingham Forest in the top league lost fewer matches in the top three divisions. So quite a team, that is.
Pete and Tim, we talked a lot about this in the previous podcast, but what have you made of the season so far at Spurs?
I think it's been probably more disappointing than I expected it to be. I think, you know, when you look at the fantastic run we had towards the end of last season, you just thought, yeah, okay, that's something to build on. And we've not really done that. The results have been a bit up and down. I mean, listen, it's not a disaster. We're fifth in the league, still in the Champions League, and still in the FA Cup. So there's plenty to play for. But I don't know if it's something to do with the World Cup being in the middle of the season, but it just has been... The whole season just seems to be a bit disjointed up to this point. There've been some high spots. I think the 4-0 win at Palace the other week was certainly one of those. But it's just that consistency. You can't get that consistency right. And certainly home form since the World Cup has been very poor. So that's something that needs to be sorted out. But as I say, there's still everything to play for. It's a long way from being a poor season.
Well, we talked about Gary Neville laying the law down to Spurs fans on Sky the other day, saying, hang on, look at this. Yeah, it is all still to play for. I don't think the longer-term unhappiness of some people about the Enic ownership, which brings me on to another question. Do you think people like me and you who saw Spurs win, in my case, lots of trophies in the 70s, then the 80s and all the rest of it, do you think we're blasé about the fact that they haven't won a trophy for a long time? I mean, trophy droughts come, don't they? I mean, Manchester United is 6 years since they won anything. Everton, it's an enormous amount of time. Newcastle, it's half a century. Although one of Newcastle and Manchester United are going to probably put that right in the League Cup in the next couple of months. Are you desperate for a trophy, Pete, or do you just want to see the team play great football?
I want both, ideally. I think, and listen, I mean, it is an awful long time since Spurs won a trophy. It's far too long. This is a big club that should be, if not winning, at least competing for trophies on a regular basis. And that hasn't happened. That's not just a recent thing. That's been going on for the last 30 years. So you can understand the frustration of fans because, football is about winning. It's not all about winning, but it is. I mean, winning is a very important part of it. And winning trophies is a very important part of it for supporters. And if you haven't done that for a long time and the supporters are looking at it and thinking, well, I can't see anything exciting coming maybe in the future either at the moment, then they're going to get upset about it. So you can understand the frustration there. I mean, obviously you can, but it's just the way it is. And it's been like this for an awful long time.
Well, you are in the most competitive league ever. I shouldn't use that as an excuse because we saw what Leicester did and we are seeing, I have to say these words very quietly, what Arsenal are doing. But as I keep telling people, Arsenal are... If you're not happy the way Spurs are right now, Arsenal are the inspiration because, let's not kid ourselves, it's exactly 12 months since Arsenal were in an identical position as Spurs. People protesting about the ownership, the team not quite clicking, the manager asking for patience, and boom, with a combination of circumstances, bit of magic, there they are. Favourites for the title, whether they'll win it or not is still very much to be seen. But, Newcastle have shown it too. It doesn't take much to turn these football teams, I can talk not about clubs, but teams around. And Pete, what about, you talk about working in a new modern studio in what is clearly the best stadium of its kind in the world. I can only really think of the Cowboys Stadium in the United States that can match it in any sport. When you sit there and knowing that the training ground is all the rest of it, all those things are in place, A, are you amazed? Because I'm sure you were broadcasting from much less salubrious circumstances at White Hart Lane. What do you make of the infrastructure of the club now? Because it is, by most people's thoughts, just remarkable.
Oh, it's been the great success story at the club in the last 20 years. The stadium and the training facility are both genuinely world class, and that particularly the training ground. I think if you've got a training facility like that, that is surely going to help attract good players. Good players are going to want to going to come there and think, well, this lot must be decent. Look at the facilities they've got. I think that has been the success story for Daniel Levy and for Enic since they've been there. The on the field stuff hasn't been as successful as everybody, and I'm sure them included, would have wanted. But I think you have to give credit where it's due, and Daniel Levy has done an extraordinary job, not just with the stadium, but with the training facilities as well. I mean, when I first started, the training facilities were an old council run place in Mill Hill. Which was terrible. I mean, you couldn't believe how bad those training facilities were at the time. And I remember when they moved to Chigwell, the immediate improvement was there to see. But I mean, this is another level altogether with what they've got now in Enfield.
It just struck me, Pete, that because Spurs don't win the league, I think I can say that with reasonable certainty. You don't get to announce, you haven't got to announce them winning trophies at White Hart Lane, as of course they did win the UEFA Cup in the early 80s at home. That's not, it's not the way it works. What would you say has been the most, and of course things like Amsterdam happened away from home essentially after a terrible performance at the Lane. To finish talking about your career there, can you remember the most excited you've ever been at White Hart Lane, the biggest thing you've had to announce?
There's a couple. I think the game against Inter Milan at White Hart Lane, which was the taxi for Maicon game. That is probably as excited as I've ever been at a Spurs game, I would say. Certainly, that's the best atmosphere I've ever heard, I think, certainly at White Hart Lane. So that one was a special evening. The other one that sticks out in the memory is the 9-1 against Wigan.
Their goal was handball, by the way.
It was handball, yeah. Indeed, yeah. It was. But the extraordinary thing about that game was nobody, at halftime, nobody saw that coming. It was 1-0 to Spurs at halftime. Peter Crouch had scored a scrappy goal, and nobody expected what was coming in the second half. And there was, it's the only game in all the ones that I've done where I've lost track of the scoreline. And I actually had to ask Simon, the guy who used to operate the screens at Spurs, what the score was.
Right, let's move from talking about things out in the past to the immediate future. Spurs have an FA Cup tie. I mean, it's for fans of for legacy fans, as we get called. The thought of Preston North End against Tottenham Hotspur is just one of those fixtures that looks right, even though they haven't probably played each other for a quarter of a century. They may have played in the cup that I don't remember. Tim, you're in and around the club. How seriously are they taking the FA Cup this year? And how important, therefore, is this game?
It's been 14 years since they played Preston, Danny. A 5-1 away win in what was known as the Carling Cup. Incredibly, or not so incredibly, because Preston haven't been in the top flight for a while, but they haven't played Preston in the league since 1960-61. How seriously will they take it? I think pretty seriously, to be honest. And the fact that there's no league game for 8 days afterwards will help. The fact that they've got injured players now back and a new sign-in will help. And he went really strong in the League Cup, didn't he, before Christmas, surprisingly, at Nottingham Forest. And then for the Portsmouth game in the FA Cup, we made 8 changes, but went with the strongest front three. I would suspect a strong 11. I mean, Preston are having a decent season. They're 11th, but they're only 2 points from the playoffs. In classic Championship style, one win separates 5th from 12th. People might remember Preston's extraordinary start to the season, where in their first 8 games, there were 3 goals scored, 2 for Preston, 1 for the opposition. So,
XG! So,
incredible, really. So, they don't score many, but they don't concede many. So, you know, they'll be tough to beat. It'll be rowdy there. It'll be, a big atmosphere at Deepdale. Huge game for them.
Yeah, I mean, Preston, I mean, a very, very famous old name. And I mean, when the draw was made, I mean, Spurs were not playing particularly well and not really getting any results. And as soon as I saw the draw, I thought to myself, oh, blimey, that's got upset written all over it. I'm a bit more confident about it now, actually, because, the results have been better. And certainly away from home, we seem to be a better team right now than we are at home. So I'm a bit more confident about it than I was when the draw was made. But,
you really are suffering. If you don't think they can beat Preston, you're really suffering.
Well, we've been there before. How many times have we been there before? I can remember in the 1970s, we never won an FA Cup tie. We got beaten by all sorts of people. It happens. Cup upsets happen. You just don't want to be on the end of it. But
been a particularly good, a rich season for them, which is all the more reason to keep putting out decent teams, because already some of the potential winners are out of the tournament.
And of course Arsenal or City will go on Friday.
Yeah. So this is tricky because we don't know he's going to play, and predicting the future in football is a mug's game. But it is possible this is the game in which Harry Kane will break Jimmy Greenwood, already equaling it. I must say, Pete, a big tear came out of my eye and rolled down my fat face when he got the winner at Fulham. Because, Pete, you probably just missed Jimmy Greaves by one season. I saw the last 2 years at Spurs. And I don't know, is it just a function of age that I'm actually looking forward to him breaking his record. I want to know that everything I know is partially wrong, because Jimmy Greaves' record, and I'll repeat this when he does finally break it, has seemed to be as set in stone as, you know, Everest being the highest mountain in the world. I never in my wildest dreams thought a player would come on. Well, think about it. It's 10 seasons with an average of 26 goals a season you've got to do. Now, Kane has done it quicker than that. It really is an extraordinary thing when he does it.
When, yeah, definitely when. I mean, yes, he has been a remarkable footballer. I've got to say, and I'll hold my hands up now, when he first came into the team, I taught myself, no, he's not going to make it. He's not good enough. He's not quick enough.
Abbott.
I hold my hands up. But he's been a phenomenon. Like all great strikers, he loves scoring goals. And he is unbelievably good at it. We are so lucky to have had someone of this calibre playing up front for as long as he has at Spurs, because they just don't come around often like that. And I think he's, as you say, I just miss Jimmy Greaves, but he's easily the best striker I've ever seen at Spurs.
Yeah, and he may be, if I pushed you, is he the best player you've seen at Spurs?
It's still Glenn Hoddle for me, to be honest.
That is the answer you're bound to give. But I always say this, and it bemuses people. I say Glenn Hoddle was the best player I ever saw playing at Spurs, and he wasn't even the best player in the midfield he was in, because Ardiles was in many ways a better player. Extraordinarily
I mean, Ozzy would probably be my second favourite player of all time, but Harry Kane would have to be up there, and certainly. I think you become more nostalgic once they no longer play for your team. So in years to come, I suspect he will be, he may well even eclipse the great Hoddle.
Thank you all for listening for the last little while. We'll be back on Monday, and we'll be hopefully talking about the end of the transfer window, what Spurs have done in and out, and hopefully a victory over Preston North End, and maybe even a record-breaking goal for the great Harry Kane. If you're not already an Athletic subscriber, what are you doing with your life? Sign up now and read all of the in-depth coverage about Spurs from Jack Pitbrook and Tim, as well as everything else that's on the site. Just go to theathletic.com/SpursPod and sign up right now for $1.99 a month for the first 12 months. That's theathletic.com/SpursPod. Thanks for listening. We'll be back with you next week. Bless you all.
The Athletic.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.